Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. We're a day late. Things happen. I'm Kevin Acey. I'm in San Francisco. Been here for 24 hours. Jay Posner, sports editor of the Union Tribune. And I will tell you that you never know what you're going to see when you go to the ballpark. Padres down 5-0 on Monday, opening game of this three-game series against the Giants. Another big inning, another big fourth inning that Eric Lauer gave up. Grand slam, Kevin Pillar. And then the Padres start to chip away, and they end up winning 6-5, the ultimate blow, a two-run homer by Franmil Reyes, his first homer of the year. That thing just went and went and went, 426 feet. It seemed like 1,000. Padres win, Jay. Their fifth victory, I'll let you talk, but their fifth victory this season of seven, and they played 11 games. Fifth one earned where the deciding run came in the sixth inning or later. The fourth one they've earned where the deciding run came in the seventh inning or later. I haven't gone back and looked. I did not see a lot of those last year.
Kevin, we called this yesterday. We recorded a podcast yesterday, and we said the Padres are going to fall behind, and then they're going to come back, and then Franmil Reyes is going to hit a home run. And, you know, then we had production issues, and it never got posted. But, hey, don't you remember we called this?
You know, Jay, being that I think it was 24 hours ago I was actually in St. Louis, when you first started out, I'm like, did we really? And then it just got a little preposterous.
Yeah.
But here's the funny part, Jay. The funny part is I'm sitting there last night, and I said, you know what, there's still going to be a game played here when they were down 5-0. I didn't know they were going to win. I'm not saying I called that at any point, but I didn't think it was impossible where it wouldn't even have crossed my mind last year.
Right. No, there's no question that this team would give fans more confidence that it's capable of coming back. And the thing is, I'm looking at the box score from last night. You know, Luis Urias, who we'll talk about later, 0 for 5 in the leadoff spot. Manny Machado, 0 for 4. Hunter Renfro, 0 for 4. Eric Hosmer, 0 for 3, although he had a walk. So that's four of the five guys at the top of the order that didn't have a hit. Now, Will Myers had the big, had a big home run in there. After, gosh, the Giants, do they always whine like this? I mean, every team complains about calls, but, you know, Bumgarner, I mean, he throws that curveball to Myers that it's at least 6 inches outside, and he stomps around the mound that it wasn't called a strike, and they complained about the check swing that may or may not have been a strike or a swing. The Padres did get away with one of those on Sunday, I think it was, in St. Louis, or Saturday it might have been, when Hosmer should have struck out. But anyway, it just seemed like, wow, there was a lot of complaining last night over a lot of calls that were actually, I thought, pretty good from this umpire. And I guess this umpire, I was listening to Dave Fleming on the Giants broadcast on my way home, one of my favorite announcers out there, and he was saying that this umpire had thrown out Bumgarner last year, right after he came up from the minors. I guess Bumgarner had been removed from the game, and he was walking off the mound and just kept yelling at him, and the guy, he was already out of the game, but the umpire threw him out anyway. So maybe there was a history there. But anyway, I digress. That was a big win for the Padres, and especially in the fashion that they did it. For Reyes to hit a ball that far in those conditions last night, deep into the San Francisco night, as I believe Don Orsillo called it on television. Just the sound of that. I tweeted the replay of the home run and made a mention of the sound. Not a lot of balls get hit that hard where you just hear it and you go, oh my gosh, that thing is crushed. And he hit that thing a long way on a cold and rainy night up there. Very impressive. Not that we haven't seen his strength before, but still, that was some blast to do in those conditions, coming off the bench like that.
Yeah, I could have put my head down after that one. I knew that was gone. The only question was it going to be foul? But I just think that if it got another 1,000 feet, it might have kept hooking foul. But it was hooking. But it was just so like much of a line drive that it was absolutely an incredible shot. Fernando Tatis gets hit to start that inning. Then Francisco Mejia lines a double that almost went out, actually,
right,
at
right.
right field, that huge brick wall in front of the bay out there. A grounder by Manuel Margot, who I do believe had a hit last night. That's a good sign.
Yeah, two hits, actually.
Tatis and then came the homer. It was, look, this is, it does appear to be who they are, to paraphrase Franmil, and no one can ever quote Franmil's the best. Oh my gosh, the voice, the fact that he speaks in English that is incredibly impressive, because he gets very deep, but of course, you know, it's a second language, and it's just fantastic how Franmil talks.
He was great after the game on the post-game interview with Bob Scanlon on TV, and I think Scanlon asked him something like, did you get all of that one? And he just said, yes.
He's very, even when he understates something like that, I can see his face. But anyway, he's a character. And I do believe it's true that if, you know, he goes like this, Eric Hosmer said last month was, this will be the last year that Franmil Reyes rocks into ballparks where people don't know who he is. He's that kind of character. Anyway, I digress. I like to talk about Franmil as much as you like to talk about umpires. But to paraphrase, this is who they are. And I will say once again, 11 games into the season, I am talking more about the process and about the type of team they are and what they're showing than I am about, oh, they're 7-4 and they're going to the playoffs this year. I'm talking about the way that they're going about doing things that I do believe this is who they are. I don't know if that means success, quote unquote, in 2019, but I believe it portends success at some point here, that they are playing this way. And as you mentioned, it doesn't have to be. Now, there will be plenty of games, I believe, this year where you're facing a guy like Bumgarner, who was dealing, maybe not as sharp last night as he was on opening day. By the way, they beat him then too. That one of these players, Manny Machado, let's say, is the guy that helps them win it 1-0 or 2-1. But there have been a lot of games this year where it's playing out that their lineup does have length. It's deep, that anyone can do it. Highly impressed by Fernando Tatis, who has some very rookie at bats, but also has some really, really good at bats. Speaking of a process, speaking of him showing you things that you go, he's special.
No, absolutely, and he's shown us that before, and I think to stand in last night against and homer off a guy like Bumgarner, I didn't see the first hit by pitch, but I did see the second one, and I sometimes it's always amazing to hear people think that, you know, every time a guy gets hit, it doesn't mean he was being thrown at. I mean, that
certainly was not the second time.
That was a 3-2 pitch. Bumgarner had already thrown it. He had fouled off at least two pitches on 3-2. Might have been three. And Bumgarner tried to come in with a pitch instead of a breaking ball. He threw a fastball in and it hit him. But to suggest that he was throwing at him is as ludicrous as to suggest that Brad Wick was throwing it at Parra when he, you know, unfortunately hit him in the shoulder slash face. The Padres have a one-run lead. I don't think Brad Wick's throwing at anybody.
Just same with a two-run lead. We're going to bring up the tying run for Bumgarner on the second one. Now,
exactly.
The first one where he hit him, I thought it was interesting because he hit him twice. Now, let's watch next time he faces Bumgarner early in a game.
Right,
because
right.
Fernando Tatis Jr., a rookie, is 3-for-4 with a home run and a bunt single against this head case, Madison Bumgarner. So let's watch next time when he faces him.
Very talented head case, we should throw out there. But he's definitely emotional.
Love him.
Right, he's definitely emotional, and he's the kind of player that, look,
yes.
I mean, in a sense, and I don't mean to compare him at all with Machado and his emotions, but in a sense, he's that guy that when he's on your team. Now, Bumgarner doesn't have the bad reputation around the league the way that Machado does, but when Bumgarner is on your team, man, you think he's the greatest guy ever. And so far, the way that Machado has acted since he's been here, and let's face it, through most of his career, minus a couple of incidents, but still, the way Machado has been here, and you wrote the story about him over the weekend about how much fun he's having and how much fun he's brought to this team. You know, look, why wouldn't Padre fans love this guy right now? And who cares if he goes to San Francisco or he goes to Phoenix or wherever he goes and he gets booed? You know, it's fun, I think, from a fan's standpoint, when you have a player like that on your team. And I think back, I know we refer to our football days sometimes. I think back to a guy like Rodney Harrison that we covered. People around the league hated Rodney Harrison. When he was a Charger, he was one of the most popular players they've ever had. People loved Rodney Harrison when he's on your team. And I think Machado is a guy like that, and Bumgarner, you know, probably is as well.
Oh,
but
absolutely. Look, if I'm going to say about Padres players or players I cover that, you know, sort of what you just said about if he's on your team, you love him, or if I'm going to talk about, hey, you got to understand, this is the way this guy is, I want to make it clear, I think Madison Bumgarner is awesome. And you do not change Madison Bumgarner, or else he's not the, you know, World Series winner and the guy that he's been. So absolutely. I do think it's awesome that Fernando Tatis has dropped down a bunt single and homered off of him.
Right.
And,
no, it's something that just kind of shows us what Tatis has. We mentioned yesterday on the podcast that no one ever heard that, you know, from what you've seen from him so far, you know, he's going to have his rough moments, but he's also shown so many signs of doing special things, both defensively and last night, that it's, you know, the idea that we can go to the ballpark and you go almost every day, but I mean, I people here in San Diego can turn on the TV every day and go to the ballpark for half the games and watch a left side of the infield with Machado and Tatis. That's the kind of stuff that has been missing from this team for so long, are guys that I remember when Piazza was here for a year, and it was like, okay, when Piazza's up, I'm never leaving my seat. You know, mm-hmm. This is the kind of guy that you want to see. And now it's like you don't want to leave your seat when the Padres are in the field as much as anything, because you don't know what you might see from those guys defensively. And then you don't want to miss either one of their at-bats, and other guys as well. But those guys come to mind as just you never know what's going to happen when those guys come up. And I think Renfro and Reyes are guys like that too, because you just don't know how far they might hit the ball. And that's always fun to watch, which brings us to a subject I guess we might as well get into, and the outfield. Where do things stand now? Franchy Cordero on the sideline, very disappointing. Their only left-handed hitter was off to a good start. We talked about it, much better at bats. Where do things stand now? Obviously, they have a four-man outfield right now, four right-handed hitters. Is there an odd man out, or are we just going to see a rotation quite a bit?
I think we're going to see a rotation quite a bit. I'll be writing about it today, that, you know, how it's going to go. What does Franchy's loss mean? The left-handed bat. The fact is, you know, and I'll break it down, but, you know, these guys, Hunter's gotten better, you know, facing both hands. Franmil has, Margot has reverse splits. Myers is good against both. I think they're going to survive the way they, the way that they're constructed, though, they would like to have a little more. They're going to miss Jankowski and Franchy Cordero, left-handed speed, athleticism, on-base guys off the bench. But the way that they're doing this rotation is, I mean, it's remarkable. Myers has hit a home run off the bench. Renfro's hit a home run off the bench. Franmil, obviously, last night, home run off the bench. I believe they're batting 400. Their outfielders are off of the bench, guys who don't start and come in. Every single game, someone has come in to play 8 of the 10 games to play as a defensive replacement, 9 of the 10 – or 8 – 9 of the 11 defensive and 10 of the 11 off the bench to hit. That's incredible.
No, that's a great sign of that. Guys, you know, look, I'm not in the starting lineup, but I'm not just going to sit here and pout about it. And I know Andy Green talks about it quite a bit. And I'm sure some people roll their eyes at anything he says. But when he talks about the idea that he, it was like the other day when Cordero left the game, it was like, why are we hitting for Franchy Cordero? Our manager sucks. But anyway, when he says, hey, you can impact the game coming off the bench, that's true in almost every game where those guys are going to get a chance to hit, even if it's just one pinch hit appearance, like Renfro the other day in St. Louis, Reyes last night. That might be your one chance to impact the game, but you're going to get that chance and you're going to help the team if you're ready to capitalize. Look, they're not going to come in all the time and hit home runs off the bench, but the idea that now they've done it, they know that they can impact the game. Even if they're not starting, there's a good chance that they're going to be in it at some point over the next 3 hours.
It couldn't have started better in terms of, you know, the close games have given them the opportunity to show it, and then they've actually done it a lot of times. You come through, so you are correct. And that is sort of, it's still a little bit about what this is about for these guys, which is teaching moments and getting them to believe, right?
Close games have also given them a chance, and winning these close games have given them a chance to do what you wrote about in the story the other day, mostly about Machado and the handshakes and the fun and all that. You could tell at the start of the season it was a little different dugout, had a little different look to it. And these guys, you can tell at least at this point that they have that you know, chemistry that people talk about, and whether it how it holds up in a 7-game losing streak or whatever, we'll see, because you never know until it happens. But it just seems like this team has the you know, this team is together, is having fun, and again, we're not saying they're going to win 85 games and go to the playoffs, but what I am saying is that I think this team is much more interesting to watch, much more fun to watch. And, you know, whether that means they win, you know, 78 games or 88 games to, you know, go way out there, I still just think this is a much more interesting season, certainly at the start, than we've seen in a few years.
Right. And just one more time to refer to that story. That is a huge deal for Manny Machado, is to build this so that when the 7-game streak comes, it doesn't become 8, or the 4-game streak doesn't become 5.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a part of it. It just is. We all roll our eyes at it, Jay. You know, the chemistry thing, because you know, everybody talks about it. Well, when you're seeing it, then, you know, you do understand that it's important. And guess what? If it's important to the guys in the room, the guys who are, you know, winning and losing, then it's important. Jay, before we run out of time, let's talk about the pitching staff again on our podcast yesterday that did not make it. This one will. I'm sure of it, Jay.
I'm positive.
But we talked about what they were going to do, and we theorized, and yes, the Padres are pushing back Chris Paddock from his scheduled Thursday start to Friday, and Matt Strom from Friday to Saturday in Arizona. They probably will go with some sort of bullpen game on Thursday is the opener in Arizona, but that will depend on what happens over these next two games in San Francisco as we sit here and record this on Tuesday. You have Robbie Erlin, you have Matt Whistler down on the farm. You have any of these guys at AAA that they could hold to come up and give them 3 or 4, maybe 5 innings if things went well. Brian Mitchell, Cal Quantrill, Logan Allen. Now, those guys, they're between their springs and the starts at AAA. What are you going to get from them? But the fact is, the most important thing, especially early, they are not going to pitch Chris Paddock and Matt Strom on 4 days rest, at least until next month, and they're not going to do it very often this season. This rotation is about winning, but they're the way that they're approaching this rotation is, hey, we want to win, but the long-term health of these guys coming back from serious surgeries in 2016 and 17 is way more important.
Yeah, I mean, that was an interesting thing that you had proposed when we spoke yesterday, that was likely going to happen, and you know, they confirmed it before the game. And I think that's just, it's being smart, as you talked about. I can't have a problem with that. I guess the one question that people have, and I laugh a little bit when I see this on social media, is people say the Padres have to go get a pitcher. I mean, I think Jim Bowden said, you know, they should sign Keuchel and trade for either Bauer or Kluber and go for it, you know, go for it right now. People, you know, they need a starting pitcher. They need a starting pitcher. Where are you going to get a starting pitcher other than Dallas Keuchel, who, as we've talked about before, even if you signed him now, he would need 3 or 4 weeks probably to get ready. But, you know, every team needs starting pitching, pretty much. I mean, the Indians, for instance, Mike Clevinger, who's been great for them, is out at least six to eight weeks, they were saying today, before he can even pick up a ball. So, I mean, are the Indians now going to be trading Bauer or Kluber? It seems rather unlikely, you know, that they would want to do that when they just lost one of their guys. So there's not a lot of surplus of pitching out there. So the question becomes, what do the Padres give up? Their surplus of outfielders isn't such a surplus right now because of injuries. And then it becomes a matter of what kind of prospects are you going to give up for what kind of pitcher, and what kind of pitcher is available out there. I mean, it makes perfect sense. Yes, the Padres could desperately – I don't even want to say desperately. The Padres could certainly use another starting pitcher for this year. But I think that probably puts them in line with maybe 28 or 29 other teams in baseball in that regard. So I don't think it's just as easy as saying, hey, let's go get a pitcher, and then he's there.
And we could talk about this every single time. I'll try to make it as brief as possible. You got to think about the future and the 5 or 6, what they believe. They got 2 of them in the clubhouse, and Nelson Lamet and Garrett Richards. They got 5 or 6 guys down on the farm that they believe are potential aces. Will all of them be? No. But, I mean, how long are you going to give Dallas Keuchel, what, $15 to $18 million for 1 year? Are you going to give him, you know, $35 or $30 for 2 years?
Right,
and then
right.
Where's your spot in your rotation? How good is Dallas Keuchel? Let me tell you something. If people thought that the drop in velo wasn't a problem, he'd be on somebody's team. Look, I will be surprised if they don't add a starting pitcher. But I, you know, I don't think it's really the answer that we all would like it to believe right now. It is troubling, Jay. It is troubling. This bullpen is being worked at this point. It's trending toward too much. Yep. You can't say too much right now. They're getting them the rest. They've had a few advantageous off days. It's early in the season, but it's trending. They've pitched more innings than anybody in baseball, or they had going into last night. And Eric Lauer has gone six innings twice. No other starting pitcher has gone six innings. We know about the limitations on Strom and Paddock. It is, if not troubling at this point, it's something to be on the radar that they need more innings out of their starters. And with the limitations they have on two of them, we'll see.
No, I would agree. And the one thing I'll say is that you got to give Lauer some credit. I mean, he had a terrible fourth inning, but he came back and pitched two shutout innings after that, and he got him through six. And as you said, they've got to get some guys that can get them at least six innings. You know, tonight if they could get Joey Lucchese to you know, even go seven, it would be even better for them. But they've got to get Lauer and Lucchese have got to be able to go at least six innings more often than not, because as you said, Paddock and Strom, you know, may not be able to do that. Mark Gavichis the same way. They seem like more 4, 5, 6 on their best day, whereas Lauer and Lucchese, you would hope, would be more like 6 and 7 on their best day, because you can't keep throwing these guys in the bullpen out there for 3, 4 innings every single night without them wearing down.
Well, even if Whistler and Erlen and Warren were as good as Stam and Yates, right? Different roles, but mm-hmm. You understand what I'm talking, the effectiveness, right?
Yeah.
These relievers talk about getting up and down multiple times in games is the hardest thing on them. So you just can't be throwing 2 and 3 innings. Even if you were, you know, throwing 2 and 3 shutout innings, you can't do that three times a week.
Right. No, there's no question. So that makes tonight becomes interesting. Lucchese is yet to allow a run in his two starts. One of them was against this team back here a week and a half ago. So he'll pitch tonight, and then obviously a quick turnaround tomorrow with Mark Gavichis. So, you know, two straight lefties, and they need a little bit of length out of at least one of those guys. And you would think that Lucchese is the more likely this evening, and facing Derek Holland tonight. Is that correct?
Facing Derek Holland, just as he did last time, and tomorrow Mark Gavichis and Derek Rodriguez. And I would say that, if they can get through tonight with Lucchese going the, let's say, 7, and they, you know, don't have to stretch out their bullpen, that really sets them up well for Thursday and whoever it is they decide that they're going to start on Thursday in place of Paddock.
And we talked briefly yesterday about how I think I brought up the Giants were horrible offensively. They'd only scored 25 runs, you know, in their 10 games. They were hitting like .208. Their team OPS was under 600. So, of course, they get a 5-run inning last night, including a grand slam by that noted power hitter, Kevin
Pillar. Grand slam.
Right, Kevin Pillar. So, but again, the Padres were able to overcome that. And even in the office here, I'm hearing more people talking about the Padres than certainly they have over the last 3 or 4 years. And it just it goes back to what we were saying. It's more interesting. And, you know, the longer they can keep it like this, the longer they can stay relevant. I think it's just better for everyone, and certainly for their fans who have been waiting a long time for players like the ones that we're seeing right now.
Well, it made me want to go to the ballpark again, yet again, Jay. Good job.
Well, that's great, Kevin. That's exactly why I think we're paying you all that money to get out to the ballpark.
Jay, I liked watching bad baseball. Can you imagine how excited? I think I know how excited I am.
Well, I'm the same way. I mean, I'm the same way. I mean, I watch a lot of games on television.
Yes,
I go to a lot of games, and it's, you know, I enjoy baseball anyway. But good baseball is more fun to watch than bad baseball. So we'll see if we can see some more good baseball here in the next couple of days. And then we will talk to you when you get to Phoenix on Thursday before the big 4-game series in Arizona.
Right on. All right. Thank you, everybody.